This is a HeadGum Original.
Evan, in your opinion, who is the top nepotism baby of all time?
Nepotism baby?
Number one nepotism baby.
Nepotism baby.
I don't know why that has become the going slang for the children of famous people who become famous, but somehow it has, all of a sudden.
Yeah, such a 2022
nepotism
term.
Baby.
Yeah, nepotism baby. Ivanka Trump. Yeah, I mean, well, Donald Trump himself just made believe that he was rich based on his daddy's riches, and then everyone believed him all the way until he was really rich.
Okay. I'm going to hit you with one. It's one of the chosen people. You might think I'm going to say Jacob Dylan.
Sure, because that's what this episode is about.
This episode is about the Wallflowers.
Yeah.
And Jacob Dylan, but no. I'm going to go with Jesus Christ, Son of God.
Huge nepotism baby. Yeah, he never would have gone anywhere if it wasn't for his dad
bringing
pulling the
in some
strings.
Theological issues. If you're one of the chosen people, you probably don't think Jesus is the Son of God.
Yeah.
Let's just get out of those thorny issues. Let's step out of those thorny issues and start talking about Jacob Dylan and Bob Dylan.
The problem with nepotism babies is there's so many you don't know about. That's why it's probably a hot topic this year.
That's
a
hot topic.
Yeah, you forget Drew Barrymore has her own whole career. You forget that she's the scion of a dynasty of Barrymores.
Yeah, then you watch It's a Wonderful Life and Mr. Potter starts getting,
I see what you're doing, George. You come in here.
And you're like, man, this crotchety old man's really reminding me of that movie E.T.
100%. So this week we're talking nepotism babies. We're talking Jacob Dylan. We're talking the Wallflowers. And unavoidably, we'll probably be talking Bob Dylan.
Oh, boy.
Has the podcast ever punched up a Bob Dylan song?
I don't think so.
We'll have to come back to that. What's the Bob Dylan song you would punch up if you had to pick one?
Greatest songwriter, all the old fogies would say, in human history.
Yeah.
Certainly of the 20th century.
Yeah. What do you pick?
The podcast has been afraid across its collective history to take on the bards, the poets of our industry, the music industry. I say our music industry because we are a part of it by virtue of making this podcast.
What's the best Bob Dylan song that you pick? What's his greatest hit?
What is Bob Dylan's greatest hit?
What's Bob Dylan's greatest hit?
I mean, like, most important, Blowing in the Wind, it's like, that made people go do hippie revolution stuff.
That made people...
The times they are a-changing?
People heard that song and they were like, I'm going to go to Alabama this summer and work for civil rights. And it really, really, that song changed things.
Yeah.
That's a good song. Not a lot of songs do that. Times They Are Changing, that's a good pick. I don't know. Those are hard songs to punch up. I think I'm going to have to pass on Blowing in the Wind. I refuse to make a joke of it. It's too sacred for me.
Wow. Andrew is a heretic on the podcast by claiming that song's unpunchable.
I'm drawing a line in the sand.
Wow. What about Like a Rolling Stone?
Yeah.
Huge formative hit. Important in his career. Very memorable.
Yeah, sure.
You wouldn't say the Rolling Stones are named after it. They're named after the
Muddy Waters song.
They're named after the Muddy Waters song, which all draws from the same old idiom that a Rolling Stone gathers no more. But,
Do you think... I don't want to talk about Bob Dylan too much.
Too late.
But maybe,
too late.
Or do I?
Oh,
but
boy.
Is Like a Rolling Stone a little too close to the song we're actually talking about this week, One Headlight by the Wallflowers?
Is it too... No, I don't know. It's not too close.
It has the organ. It has the singing.
There is singing.
There's a Dylan.
Sure. Yeah,
there's
a
Dylan.
There's a Dylan.
There's singing.
Yeah.
And there's an organ.
So what we're talking about, let's just tell people what we're talking about here.
Song facts.
We are talking about the Wallflowers, whose lead singer and multi-instrumentalist and songwriter frontman is...
And very handsome man, Jacob Dylan. Extremely handsome heartthrob in the 90s.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about why that's important. He is the son of Bob Dylan, music royalty.
And I'm also here to tell you a little bit of Bob Dylan handsomeness erasure. I was watching the video for Jacob Dylan and being like, wow, this guy's hot as hell. And then I was going back to listen to some Bob Dylan stuff to be like, what's the connection here? Looking at some pictures of Bob Dylan in the early 60s. And you're like, man, you think of Bob Dylan as being a crotchety old man writing songs about Key West now.
Mm-hmm.
But like 1962 Bob Dylan? He might not be like a Hollywood-style heartthrob,
mm-hmm.
but the man is hot as hell.
He's a version of folky handsome.
For a second, I thought you said he was a virgin. And I was like, I don't know, man. In 1962, I think Bob Dylan was really getting around, Evan.
Yeah, no, he was getting laid in Greenwich Village by yeah. all the hippies, for sure. But Jacob Dylan is outright handsome, is what you're saying. He has a face to be adored by the cameras of MTV.
Yeah. Yeah.
You saying that contributed to his career?
I think it helped.
It was a different era than when his dad was writing. Okay. What else do we need to know about the back?
This is shocking, but I'm going to rewind, Evan.
What?
I'm going to rewind.
Mm-hmm.
Because first of all, I think our listeners need to know that they're listening to Punch Up the Jam. And it's the podcast where every week we listen to some of the greatest hits of all time. And we make them, at the end of the podcast, we make a version of the song that's irrefutably better than the previous one.
Thank you for reminding me. Thank you for reminding me about this show.
I'm usually listening to the show. I'm usually the one diverting the podcast, and you're usually the one keeping the show on the rails. But somehow the roles are reversed this week. And I'm one of your hosts, Andrew Gregory.
And I'm Evan Gregory, a man currently incensed by just imagining Jacob Dylan is listening to this podcast and realizing we're talking about his dad more than him, his worst fear.
We'll get there. And we don't have a guest this week. It's just the two of us. So as is our tradition and our want.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a stack of corrections right here. Things. I forgot we have a theme song. I'm going to keep forgetting because we only do this every 5 or 10
episodes. I'm playing it again so you can just hear how delicious it is.
So we have a couple corrections. This is from way back, the last Gregory Brothers episode, Goodbye Earl. Okay. Gregory Brothers only episode.
Yeah, several weeks ago.
Goodbye Earl. I said that Madonna's album, Material World, was on the Rolling Stone top 100 albums of all time list that came out in the year, I don't know, 2003 or 2004.
Yeah, complete word salad. You're just pulling those words out of, you did a sound alike.
Material Girl, not even an album. That is a song, and there were some Madonna albums.
And you said something different. Material World, which is Cuckoo Nuts.
I'm lost. I'm going to keep moving because there's going to be another correction. Also, it was a 500 album list, not a 100 album list. So maybe Walt had a point that GBV, Guided by Voices, could have snuck on at $4.99. But that's not part of the correction. The correction
is too long.
It's a 500 number list, not a 100.
We got the length of the list wrong, okay.
Okay, Green Day episode with Joanna Hausman a couple weeks ago. I equated cravats and ascots. I'm wading into dangerous territory here where I might get into another correction, but
yeah.
Like ascots are included in cravats, or cravats are included in ascots. I'm not sure which it is, but
you should have looked this up before you tried to correct yourself.
I needed to make a Venn diagram.
You're making it worse. You leaped right into quicksand.
The Audubon Society, I said, was founded by James Audubon, who famously painted beautiful paintings of birds, but that were also very accurate and to size. When he painted a hummingbird, he painted it like tiny, and when he painted a falcon, he painted a huge-ass falcon. It's cool. You look at the painting, you know how big the bird is.
Yeah, you have to respect it.
It was not founded by James Audubon. It was named after James Audubon because the guy who founded the Audubon Society just respected the hell out of him so much.
Yeah, just like, let's name this after a bro who loved the birds.
Get this. Guess what that guy's middle name was? And I don't think he legally changed it.
Audubon?
It was Bird.
What?
When you're born with the name Bird, like, are you just going to love birds that much? It was George Bird Grinnell.
Wow.
Shania Twain episode with Gigi, a more recent episode. Highway to Hell and Back in Black. This is like...
Yeah, we're talking about AC/DC because yes. It was produced by Mutt Lang.
There is some confusion. There's like, this is kind of a double correction because you corrected me correctly that Back in Black, not Highway to Hell, is the second greatest selling album of all time.
Mm-hmm.
But you corrected me incorrectly that Highway to Hell, you said Highway to Hell isn't an album, and it is. I was right about that.
It's
that,
a song and an
it's
album.
It's a song and an album. It was the album that preceded Back in Black and was the first album that Mutt Lang produced. So all the stories I was telling about Mutt Lang actually were from Highway to Hell, not Back in
you
Black.
You gotta get your AC/DC
right. We
were right.
Both wrong. Dr. No does not have an eye patch.
What were we talking about with Dr. No?
Bond villains. We're talking about Bond villains and how their faces are messed up. like Rami Malek.
Yeah, sure.
His face is burned with acid.
Well, you have to signify that they're baddies.
Yeah, but it's a different guy who has an eye patch, not Dr. No. I can't who remember. Maybe Dr. No's henchman or Largo? Some other guy.
That's a guy from a different movie.
I don't like those movies. Another unpopular opinion for me to hold. Oh, this is an Arthur. This is a correction from our Arthur
episode.
Doesn't
like Prince or James Bond.
And before this episode's over, I'm going to reveal another shocking third terrible opinion.
God, I hope to God you don't like Bob Dylan. I'm mad at myself
for not liking Prince. I wish I liked Prince. I'm kind of okay with this other bad opinion I'll get to in a little bit. The Arthur episode. I'm going to challenge this correction, but I loved it, so I'm still going to read it. A listener, a very sharp-eared listener, noted that in the punch-up, as you may recall, we punched up Survivor's Eye of the Tiger, or as I called it, Survivor Song, Survivor, which I corrected in episode.
Yeah.
And who showed up to guest rap in the song but fictional 80s John Lennon who loves rapping.
Yes.
One of his lines was left hook, right hook. What was that line? It was like left hook, right hook, something, something barrage or something.
You want me to look it up?
Who cares? And this keen-eared listener noted that in boxing, this was really interesting to me. I did not know this. You know, in boxing, you're kind of standing with one shoulder forward, so you have a dominant hand.
You're gonna get back that left hook barrage, you and Creed got to sprint through a training montage. Left hook, right hook.
Yeah. So you have a front hand and a back hand as you're kind of standing sideways while you're boxing. You know, imagine two guys in their breeches.
Yeah.
You don't have two hooks. Your forward hand has a hook because it's kind of coming up and like to the left or right, depending on whether you're right hand or left hand, to hit the guy on the side of the head. You're hooking him.
Uh-huh.
Your back hand is going across your body and straight into his face.
Which is what?
That's the cross.
A jab?
So you have a right hook and a left cross, or if you're left-handed, a left hook and a right cross.
What?
But the reason I don't think that is actually a correction is, you know who doesn't know about that? Fictional John Lennon. He's just not that interested in boxing. He's going to Yankees games or Mets games. He shows up for the session, and we knew it. We were right, but John Lennon was right.
Okay, so we have learned something about boxing.
Yes.
Yes, but astute listener, who was it? Do you have it on record?
No, I did not write it down. Someone in my Instagram.
This is not a correction because you cannot correct our in-character punch-up lyrics. We were right that John Lennon would also not know about boxing, the same level that we don't know about boxing.
Yeah, but I found it really educational to find out that you have one hook and one cross, depending on whether you're right or left.
When do you jab? When do you jab? I know the uppercut is the one that goes up.
I think the jab. I read this.
It's a little like a doggy paddle.
I think the uppercut can only come from your backhand. I think your uppercut is like your power punch from your back.
Sure, they got to leave themselves wide open. I know that from Mike Tyson's punch out.
I'm just making this up. Oh, I did read about it a couple days ago.
Hate when we get into this and now we're going to get corrected.
We're going to do another correction. I think the hook is kind of like your power punch from the front, and the jab is like your little like beep, 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 beep from your front, just to keep them on their toes, you know?
That's what I'm saying. It's the doggy paddle of punches.
Yeah, it's your dominant hand, your front hand.
Yeah, when you get into that little chipmunk position, you go to a little jabby jab, jabby jab, jab.
Is this a boxing podcast now?
It's a podcast about facts. This podcast is about the greatest facts of all time. We get a lot of facts right, and by the end of the show, by the end of each episode, we make up some new, better facts.
So I want to talk about some facts that a lot of times we're just talking about Wikipedia, and I want to talk about some facts about Jacob Dylan and the Wallflowers that I feel particularly qualified to talk about because about 10 years ago, I went to a TV, I believe it was a Bravo taping.
Mm-hmm.
Elvis Costello had a short-lived, in my opinion, not very good television show. It could have been good about songwriters.
Sidebar, why is this show bad?
I'm so glad you asked, because that brings me to my bad opinion. And my bad opinion is that Elvis Costello kind of sucks. Everyone likes him. Everyone likes Elvis Costello. Everyone is like, wow, new wave, punk, singer-songwriter. What can't Elvis Costello do? I just don't think he's that good.
Wow.
So, like, my main thing is, like, you're an executive at Bravo. You're going to bring in some of the greatest songwriters of all time to be interviewed about the craft of songwriting. Like, Elvis Costello is the best guy you can get? Like, you can't get Tom Petty? Or like, Tom Petty isn't even a good example. You can't get someone better than Elvis Costello.
Maybe he knew that Elvis Costello was a great interviewer.
Yeah, he wasn't, in my opinion. So who was on? I can't remember who was on. He always had on four songwriters, and they would play songs in the round, which means you take turns playing songs. They talk about how they wrote the song, and they talk about songcraft and stuff. And Jacob Dylan was on that night. Mm-hmm. So I got to hear some very good stories about Jacob Dylan. One of them being that his dad, when he was a teenager, took him, and I read this really interesting interview with him in the Times talking about his relationship with his dad, and he honestly like kind of gushed about his relationship with his dad. He said his dad never missed a Little League game.
Hell yeah, Bob.
Which I honestly even have trouble believing, but okay, sure. I guess he organizes tour schedule around it.
Yeah, it could be a bit of hyperbole.
He
but...
claimed that every time he hit a home run in Little League, Bob Dylan kept the ball. Is Bob Dylan running on, like, any Little League home run is an in-the-park home run. It's just based on incompetence. Is Bob Dylan, like, running onto the field to grab the ball out of the outfield, like,
yeah,
after he crosses home plate?
And no one can say anything, because he's Bob Dylan.
He's like, it's hard to live under my dad's shadow. Like, everybody knows that. He's like, but one weird thing is that, like, I've met a lot of my other heroes with my dad, and that they're just nervous as hell. Like, I'll be in a social setting with Tom Waits and Bob Dylan, and, like, Tom Waits is one of the greatest songwriters of all time. Mm-hmm. But Tom Waits, meaning Bob Dylan, is kind of like, oh God, it's Bob Dylan. Just like kind of quivering in his boots.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so for Jacob Dylan, it's really like informative for him to be like, okay, this is not just a me problem. This is an everyone problem.
The richest of dukes is nervous when they go to court to meet the king.
And in the interview, he mentioned Joe Strummer of The Clash. Even like you'd think that Joe Strummer would kind of be like, Bob Dylan, who cares? No, Joe Strummer was just like psyched out of his head. But on the Elvis Costello show, Jacob Dylan talked about Bob Dylan getting them backstage at a Clash show in like when he was like 12 in like the 70s or 80s. I mean, first of all, imagine like, does Bob Dylan call ahead? Does Bob Dylan just walk up to the security guard and is like, hey, I want to go backstage and meet Joe Strummer. I'm Bob Dylan. But they show up. I guess Joe Strummer is really nervous. But also they start just like giving Jacob Dylan all this shit, like all this like they're giving him like Clash costumes. They're giving him like leather vests.
He became a proxy.
He's like, Joe Strummer gave me the leather vest he wore at the concert that night, and my like dad got it framed and I had it up on my wall. And the punchline to the story was, last summer my mom was cleaning out her garage like moms do,
yeah,
and she just took Joe Strummer's framed vest to the Goodwill.
Wow.
Sarah, Bob Dylan's first wife, is just like, oh, I gotta clear out the garage. Yep. I don't know what this is. Frame leather vest. Who cares?
Yeah, plus she's sitting on a veritable pyramid of other rock memorabilia. If Joe Strummer's just casting off a vest, that means she also has all the stuff from Lee Van Helm and Tom Petty when they went on tour together, and you know, Orbison. All that stuff is also in the garage. You just don't have room for it.
So the other thing that really blew me away at the Elvis Costello show, other than how bad of an interviewer Elvis Costello was, is that Jacob Dylan, like I said, everyone is playing like two or three songs and talking about their songs. At some point, it gets around to Jacob Dylan, and he starts playing this song. He starts playing One Headlight.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, it wasn't a very good night. Like, Jacob Dylan, I think, was the most famous out of the people there. I've seen some clips from other shows where it's like, oh, Nico Case was on, or like other cool songwriters. And the crowd just went wild when he started playing One Headlight. Like, and it was like electric. It's just like, there it is. Like, he's playing it. He's playing One Headlight.
Yeah, we're getting the stripped down, unplugged version of this big hit.
It's a good song. And you've heard it so many times. And it's just like, generationally, the people there are like around my age. Like, they've heard it so much in the 90s. And he played like maybe the first phrase of it. And then he was like, and then he just quit. He's like, I don't want to play that. Or he's like, you guys know that song. And it was just like, this man is not just living under the shadow of his dad's legacy.
Wow.
He's also living under the shadow of his own
legacy.
One Headlight. It's like such a big hit.
Of having a really big album.
Just tired of it.
This is a number one hit, or effectively, because it's actually in a 90s black hole where they couldn't rate singles if they didn't sell them. But it's effectively a number one hit.
It hits number one on all the three rock charts, the first song to ever
drove
do so.
4 million album sales.
Yes. Quadruple platinum. And like, when you look at their career, it's like, they're not fully one-hit wonders. Like, some of their other albums charted in the top 40. They had two or three other albums chart in the top 40. But, like, nothing they ever did is going to be One Headlight again.
Yeah.
So you want him to be able to have the joy, to summon the joy one more time to play One Headlight for you at the Apollo Theater where Elvis Costello is interviewing.
But the fame of his own song had sucked the joy out of it for him.
But huge nepotism energy on the album. Looking at the, I was looking at the people who played on the album, and it's like Mike Campbell, the lead guitar player and one of the main songwriters for Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Mm-hmm. He plays on it.
Yeah.
John Bryan, the like legendary,
the indie legend producer.
Indie legend producer plays on it. Adam Derwitz, who's like in 1997, like the biggest rock star in America from Counting Crows.
The Counting Crows guy is singing backup.
Yes. Who else is on it? Like the one track that there's a mandolin, there's like the guy from Little Feat is playing the mandolin. Like, I don't love Little Feat, but like if you're trying to come up with in 1997 the most famous mandolin player in rock, you're like, call the guy from Little Feet.
Like any studio cat they want.
Yes. Is that because of the Bob Dylan connection or because T-Bone Burnett is producing the album and T-Bone Burnett is a legend in and of himself? David Rawlings is on it, who is like the main, Gillian Welch's like main creative partner and romantic partner.
A veritable who's who from a certain slice of Americana rock.
Yeah.
And it sounds like this.
We don't talk a lot about snare sounds on this podcast.
We talk about it more than zero. You've talked about some beefy 80s snares. I'll pause it. You've talked about some beefy 80s snares. You brought it in.
I remember.
You bring the snare sound up.
Raving about the snare sound in our first ever Gregory Brothers Only episode, Feels Like Making Love. Mm-hmm. Great snare sound on Feels Like Making Love by Bad Company.
Yeah.
Gotta say, I hate the snare sound, and it also, to me, is really living under the shadow of the Dave Matthews Band. That is that Carter Beauford snare pop. If you played the beginning on YouTube, just pull it up, of Ants Marching. Bam, pow, bam, 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 pow. It was like, it's like the mid-90s Dave Matthews.
Okay, let's compare snare sounds. Andrew asked me to pull Ants Marching. Let's compare. Oh, boy. Oh.
That Carter Beauford sound.
Okay, let me take it back just like a couple of bars. Listen to this snare. So it is very 90s. It's like mid-90s sound of that loud, trebly snare. It is the same.
It's right on. They're like, we gotta get that Dave Matthews snare sound.
We gotta
sound.
Get that loud bang. Okay, pause. Listen, we cannot set a tone of hating here. We just want to acknowledge
the song. I love this song.
This is a great song. The poetry is being attempted in this song. I mean, we can talk about whether or not it hits for you.
Yeah, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but Jacob Dylan is quoted as saying the song is about, quote, the death of ideas.
Wow.
And it's one of the songs, I think, even before I knew
You didn't want to hear him say that. You'd rather interpret it yourself.
Even before I heard Adam Duritz is on the album, we just did Long December.
Mm-hmm.
When I listened to this song, and maybe I was already in a Long December state of mind, I was just like, this is one of those songs that's like trying to pretend it's about something deeper, but it's just about a girl or a breakup.
I think this song is about, I hope I can make it in the music business.
Ah!
That's what I think it's about.
Ah!
Yeah. But maybe not. No, no, no. It's my only friend.
Well, since you died easy. She died of a broken heart disease. That's why I think it's about a breakup.
It sounds like she's dead. To me, it sounded like somebody actually died. She died easy of a broken heart. He's actually in the cemetery. He went to the funeral.
Okay. With his one headlight.
Yeah.
We
don't know about the one headlight yet. We're not there, but he's actually at a funeral, as we hear right here. Never been to a Dawn funeral, but
there's nothing he could have written that would have made people say like, oh, this isn't like Bob Dylan, because Bob Dylan's written in so many genres, but this is kind of like Bob Dylan.
What is about? What's about Bob Dylan? What is it like Bob Dylan?
I don't know, the kind of throwaway, like low energy vocal feels Bob Dylan to me. The organ feels very like a Rolling Stone to me. The famous, you know, da, 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 that famous organ lick from like Rolling Stone.
Let me, I did pull that. Here's the beginning of Like a Rolling Stone.
It's a different organ sound, but just that they're both organ driven. When you think of both songs, you think about the organ licks.
I don't know. I don't think it's similar enough.
They're both played on instruments. They both have basses. They were recorded in studios with microphones. It's just like Bob Dylan.
The bands keep playing notes. You know, Bob Dylan could have used a big fat 90s snare.
It
would have helped the groove pop off.
Send Carter Beauford back in time. If Carter Beauford's just popping off on Blowing in the Wind.
Yeah.
Bam!
The challenge might be too hard to talk about one headlight without just comparing it to other Bob Dylan stuff. Can we talk about this song on its own merits or not? I don't know if we can. I don't know if we can.
Yeah, that's the problem with nepotism, babies.
Yeah. That we just got to the pickup to the chorus, which is just great sing-along material. This is the one that makes everybody in the bar want to start going, hey, hey, hey! You don't sing along to the verse necessarily.
This would be a surprisingly good karaoke song, I think.
Oh, heck yeah.
It'd be a good sleeper karaoke song.
It'd get people singing. I think this song was in the movie recently, King of Staten Island with Pete Davidson, and that is the whole point of the thing appearing in the scene, I think, is that sense of like, we don't really know this song, but we all know the hey.
Yeah.
Bit. Here it comes.
Nothing is forever. Gotta be something better than in the middle.
Look, it hooked you. You're hosting the podcast and made you sing along.
This is a great song.
So, I heard some arguments about you. Or at least I read some arguments about whether the song's about a motorcycle or not. Mm. I think the song may have been used in motorcycle ads or insurance ads for motorcycle or something like that.
No way this song is about a motorcycle. Absolutely no way.
Exactly right. The
whole point of the chorus is we're barely getting through.
Yes!
We can barely get through the dark because I should have two headlights because I'm driving a car. But I only have one, but I'm barely going to make it home.
That's absolutely, we don't need to even argue about it. We'll say definitively that this is the truth, but I'm glad we brought it up because we can just, so if you're fighting about this at your holiday, you woke up on Christmas morning, immediately start fighting with your Uncle Sean because he thinks this song is about a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Point him to this episode of this show. This song is about driving cars.
I'm glad you brought this up though, Evan, because I have been pulled over in my car for driving with only one headlight.
Oh.
Have you ever been pulled over for driving with only one headlight?
I've been pulled over, but not for having a headlight out.
Specifically for having a headlight out.
Wow.
It was here in Brooklyn.
Did you just start jamming this
song?
Officer!
How does that go over? Well, the officer
goes over great if the officer is a young Gen Xer.
If the officer just has a good sense of humor. What happened was I was parallel parking my car on my block in Brooklyn. So I was like almost home. And I knew my headlight was out of it had been meaning to get it changed. And like you do, he pulled me over. And what I realized while he was having me roll down my window and go through the rigmarole of license and registration, is that this was 100% a probable cause for him to just see what else is up with me. Because it was 2 a.m.
Oh, nice.
I'm parking my car. I'm kind of driving weird because I'm looking for parking.
Yeah.
You drive weird when you're trying to find parking and you slam on the brakes because you're like, oh, it's a spot. And then you're like, oh, it's a hydrant. I got to keep going. So he was just like, it was a sniff test. A literal sniff test.
He's fishing.
He was having me roll down the window.
He's out there fishing.
Sniff my breath. I was driving home from a show, actually, so I could have been drinking. I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And like, so he was very, like, at the end, he was very apologetic. And he was like, sorry. And then you know what he said? He said, sorry, but, you know, the one headlight, it's very dangerous because sometimes people think it's a motorcycle.
Yeah.
just like this song. People think it's
just like this song.
But
this,
you, but the cop pulls you over for the one headlight, and the next thing you know, he's looking in your glove. He's looking. He's asking you to open the trunk.
Yeah, only if you say no. Yeah, but he's leaving, going, "This was a real Wallflowers situation, and I thought it was Chameleon Airs Riding Dirty." The trick with the motorcycle is you need to have one headlight on the motorcycle so that people don't mistake it for a car because of the way you measure distance. If you see two headlights really far away, they're close together, and you know the car is far away. But if a motorcycle had two headlights narrowly placed, you would think it's a car far away, then you hit the motorcycle.
Well, if this song was about motorcycles, it'd be called No Headlights.
It would be called No Headlights. It'd be called One Tire.
No Headlights!
Yeah, two of something, now you only have one. This would be called One Wheel.
Yeah.
I was driving my motorcycle, and now I have to pop a wheelie to get home. That's a bad version of this song.
Man, I'm not going to use it for the punch-up.
Okay. I don't know. I'm coming over to your side that, like, the
lot
secondary,
of she.
The
lot
secondary
of she.
Character of this she is figuring in prominently. Lots of she's.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see what she does in the second verse.
She said it's cold and it feels like independence. Major long December vibe.
Mm.
No wonder this started so well in Canada. People in Canada love songs about how it's cold. They're like, I finally feel seen.
Yeah, I feel seen. They know my problems. All right, just recap some of the lyrics here. Through this maze of ugliness and greed, I've seen the sign up ahead at the county line bridge. Is this song coming out the same year as that book, The Bridges of Madison County?
I thought you were going to ask the film The Big Lebowski, where he throws the ringer over the bridge. I think Bridges of Madison County came out earlier. I mean,
bit of trivia. The same guy produced this record, also produced the soundtrack for Big Lebowski.
Oh, that's a great
point.
Could
be a connect.
I'm going to guess.
Could be a connect. The T-bone is way into the county line bridges.
Yeah. Both very LA things. The Big Lebowski and Jacob Dylan. Super LA band. He moved to New York, moved back to LA to put the Wallflowers together. All his first gigs are at like the Troubadour and the Whiskey a Go-Go. Oh. And I've got some bad news for you, Evan.
Oh, no.
Well, you know what? This week I'm going to give you a choice. But it's still your least favorite segment on the show.
Then you get $5, $5, baby.
That's right, Evan. Every week I offer to give you a crisp $5 bill if you can answer a trivia question.
And I know what the segment is. Hit me with it.
And this week I'm going to give you an option.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want this to be a trivia question about the Wallflowers in Los Angeles, or a question about Jacob Dylan's family history?
Wallflowers in Los Angeles.
Okay, Wallflowers in Los Angeles. The Wallflowers have had a lot of members, Evan. They've been through a lot of members.
Okay.
And two of the former members of the Wallflowers are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Former members.
Two former members are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And both of them play in what I would call iconic Los Angeles rock and roll bands.
What?
If you can name either of these iconic Los Angeles rock and roll bands, I will give you this crisp $5 bill.
Oh, no.
I believe one is a founding member of one of the bands, and the other one is like joined in the 2010s, but like just in time to make it in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
No way. They were in the Wallflowers, then changed bands and
changed
went even bigger
bands.
Than the Wallflowers in a way that they could make it to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I have no idea.
Iconic Los Angeles bands.
I have no idea. Was it Toto? Did somebody join Toto?
No, Evan. The correct answer is either the Red Hot Chili Peppers or the Foo Fighters.
What?
But I've even... Worst news for you, which is that was a trick.
You're right. The Foo Fighters are an LA band, even though I think of them as Seattle from their grunge.
It's a trick
lineage.
Because I'm still going to do the segment a second time for the other question.
Oh, got it.
And the other question, Evan, is...
This episode sucks.
In the early 1960s, everyone knows Bob Dylan was romantically involved with folk singer Joan Baez.
Okay.
But he was also romantically involved with another musical icon.
Mm.
civil rights icon.
Mm-hmm.
And he proposed to her. She turned him down. What musical icon turned down Bob Dylan's proposal in the early 1960s?
Alicia Keys.
Wow. You got it. That's it.
Okay. Here's the $5. In the 1960s, turned down Joan Baez.
No, no, it's not. Sorry, it's not Joan Baez. Everyone knows Joan Baez. But this is another person he proposed to.
I'm mucking this up. Okay, he proposed to an icon. Is it Mary from Peter, Paul, and Mary?
It's Mavis Staples.
Oh.
Oh, no.
I did know that. I've read that, and I forgot that.
That would have been pretty cool if Bob Dylan and Mavis Staples had gotten married. You gotta admit.
Yeah.
She thought she was too young. She was like 18 or 19.
Well, she's right.
Yeah.
She's right. I didn't know that.
Hey, the fact that the drummer of the Red Hot Chili Peppers was in the Wallflowers really explains a lot about this snare sound. I don't think he even was still in at
this
point.
He's hitting the snare so hard.
I think he was already out at this point, but Jacob Dylan was like, could you hit the snare louder? He's just used to it. Harder! Again! Again! Not my tempo!
It's deafening. Everything else about this song is kind of understated. The bass line, which is so good, just that Pino Palladino, it's kind of understated. The little lead lines, but no, there's no shreddy guitar solos. It's little lead lines. Then they give him a little solo. It's on a steel, because it's like a dobro. Yeah. Those little wow.
Even the iconic organ.
It's quiet, understated.
It's just a scale.
And there's
the
one
just
dude,
playing a scale.
There's one dude in the back just going absolutely nuts. It's the drummer. It's the drummer hitting the snare drum like it stole his wife.
I like to think that this isn't a drummer. It's just a high school marching line. But they just got one bass player, like one cymbal player, and one snare player, like a marching. And that guy's just popping up.
Yeah, it might be that the rest of the kit is played by three other guys. I'm worried that it's like maybe T-Bone went deaf just at that frequency, just at like 2,000 hertz. T-Bone can't hear, and it's just like more snare.
Okay, this is a crazy fact about T-Bone Burnett. This is way off track, but this is kind of like a whole season arc.
This is what we get for picking the Wallflowers. Okay. Yes, this is a big song, but
this
it's
is
just
T-Bone
a
fact.
It's just a keyhole. It's all this other
this
crap.
This is three or four episodes I've meant to bring this up, because this is such a crazy fact, specifically about T-Bone Burnett. And I finally have a chance.
Uh-huh.
We had Julian on a couple weeks ago, Julian Shapiro Barnum.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about...
David Bowie.
We're talking about David Bowie, and we're talking about Ziggy Stardust, and he like stole the name from like a weird single, like a folk... What do you call bad music that people like? Not a folk artist, but like a outsider art. That's bad. The bad music that
what
people like.
What are you talking about?
There's a guy who's called like the Stardust Cowboy, who printed like 500 of these terrible songs.
And that's who David Bowie got the name Ziggy Stardust.
Yes, and
from.
Somehow it became like a viral hit, like how bad it was. People were passing the record around. Okay. And it was so bad, and the guy's just like, in the early 60s, just like flipping out, screaming, and like being like, woo! While the band is just playing this terrible music.
So it actually sucks. But it actually sucks. It'd be like me starting a diner and calling it Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Yeah, but it became a weird meme, and David Bowie was given the album, and he stole the name Stardust for Ziggy Stardust. I think the guy's name is Stardust Cowboy. And this might be an alternate theory of why the snare drum is so insane in the song. T-Bone Burnett, as like a teenager, was playing the drums on that single. That was his entree to, like, that guy just makes a single and then just goes away. No one ever hears from him again. But somehow T-Bone Burnett plays the drums on that as like a young kid in Texas and was just like, it's time for me to go to L.A. and be in the music business.
And he made it from Stardust Cowboy into Bob Dylan's band and then to producing movie soundtracks and rock.
Just being
records.
Like one of the biggest producers of all time
from
this like absolutely shitty single.
I think that's pretty awesome. You know, way to go, T-Bone. And now he's out here coaching drummers to hit the snare like they're chopping wood.
I think we've talked about Carter Beaufort's snare sound before.
Now I can't unhear it. We run till she's out of breath. She ran till there's nothing left. Now we've got to get back to
this. It's about the death of ideas.
Nothing is forever. Gotta be. Okay, what is this about? Tell me what is this part about? To say me and Cinderella put it all together.
What is Cinderella is the most, like, out-of-the-box princess romance story of all. She's finding her Prince Charming. Prince Charming is from Cinderella. The Glass Slipper, like, it's just a song about love. This is just a song about love with very well done but not too deep poetic lyrics.
I don't know. It's star-crossed love, man. She's dead. I'm pretty sure she is dead in the first stanza. He was at her funeral, which, oddly enough, lasted all night.
She was dead the whole time.
Yeah, so maybe he's just in love with a ghost.
What I will say, the rhyme scheme here in the chorus, on one hand, I love it. Little, middle, but I also, the way he's singing it, he is trying to rhyme forever with little. He thinks that is a rhyme. It's sending me back to an episode long ago when you guys thought I was crazy, you and Connor Ratliff, for a rhyme that I was saying Dua Lipa was trying to rhyme. And sending me even further back to one of the craziest songwriting arguments you and I had in our life with, weirdly, known tech critic David Pogue, found out we thought that the words hot and caught rhymed.
Yes.
And hot. He got mad about it.
Yeah. Hot and caught.
Hot and caught.
I think they rhyme.
I think they rhyme. And I honestly, Andrew
thinks they rhyme.
I think they rhyme. Honestly, I understand that people in our nation pronounce them different. Like, in some parts of our nation, that's a pure rhyme. Like, people say those words exactly the same. And me and Evan are from the South. We pronounce those words exactly the same. So other people might pronounce them a little differently. What? Frankly, I don't even understand how you would do that.
Nobody can
ever
pronounce
it. But it would still be close enough to be a rhyme in, like, a country song or a Broadway song or this song where somehow forever is rhyming with middle. But David Pogue was just slavishly devoted to pure rhyme and was like, hot and caught. I can't believe you guys think you're songwriters. See, I mean, that second part was kind of in jest, but he also was not getting. He was really mad about hot and caught rhyming. There's some crazy rhymes in this.
You're off on your rhyme tangents yet again. And you're absolutely blowing by my theory that he's in love with a ghost.
I'm going to make a bumper.
The song is haunted.
I'm going to make a bumper about Andrew's rhyming corner.
We're already at like 90 minutes on this episode. And I'm just getting to the best ever theory that Jacob Dylan is in love with a ghost. And Andrew's over here talking about slant rhymes.
Andrew's rhyme time.
Andrew's rhyme time. I'll make it for you.
Get slimed in Andrew's rhyme time.
Oh, brother.
But the slime is from a ghost, from the dead girlfriend.
This understated slide guitar solo, love it. Then I gaze... The place is like the truck. I think we're talking about a bar here.
I mean, the descending melody just really puts you in a place. It's like so simple, but it's very powerful.
It's melodic. It's melodic. His voice sounds nice. He sounds like he's 50, even though when this album comes out, he's probably like 25. And he's got a chiseled face.
The most beautiful blue eyes in the
whole
world.
Most beautiful blue eyes. Extreme close-up on that face in the music video. But what is this verse talking about? We got a third verse here where we're talking about a place. And I think this is the dead lady. This is where they used to hang out. Him and the dead lady.
Him and
the ghost used to go to this bar. But now he's visiting there and he feels bad about it. It feels like a beat-up truck. It smells like cheap wine. This place is such a mess. I hate it so much having these memories. I'm going to burn it down.
It feels like a beat-up truck. I turn the engine, but the engine doesn't turn. I read this as being about the Pixar film Cars.
Yeah, okay. they did Cars. They did planes.
Are there motorcycles in the Cars universe?
That's exactly the question I was going to ask. Are there?
We know that World War II happened in the Cars universe because one of the cars is a World War II veteran. But were there motorcycles fighting in World War II?
Yeah, it was the Fords versus the BMWs. I think motorcycles would probably be a different species. They'd show up and they'd be like insects and stuff.
It'd be like the horses.
Yeah, there's horses that are trucks. There's cows that are tractors. There are insects that I think are tiny cars, but they should be motorcycles. Let's finish this third verse, please, for God's sakes. Oh, that's deep as hell.
Her death.
Her death.
She's a ghost.
Or is she the dream? I think she's just a ghost, man. He's in love with a ghost. I think he went to the cemetery and stayed there all night. fell in love with a ghost.
Do you remember that movie from the 90s where Nick Cage is an angel and he falls in love with Meg Ryan?
Yeah, it's called Angel something.
City of Angels. I really hope they put this in the soundtrack. I don't know if they did, but, you know, he becomes a human so he can love her, and then she gets hit by a logging truck and dies. And he's like, it was worth it. This would be a great song to play during the credits. I just hope they used it. I'm a music director now.
I like Man, I Ain't Changed, but I know I ain't the same. That's great songwriting technique. Just say A and then say also opposite of A. And people are like, hell yeah, man. That's the way I feel. Same. I'm grown up, but I feel like I'm young.
There is a punched-up version of this where you just find the drums and turn them down. Just turn down.
You just turn down
not
the snare.
Not even all the drums, just the snare.
I'm imagining just watching this band. This is coming from a guy who saw the Wallflowers at some point in the late 90s.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure I saw them open for Sheryl Crow or some crazy concert I was at.
They did open for Sheryl Crow.
That's something you know from your
song facts? That's something I know from my song facts.
Major song facts.
Listen, I'm just, I don't.
The list
I don't,
of bands they open for is insane, and you kind of have to wonder, like, are they opening for these bands because of, like, they're opening for the Rolling Stones. The Rolling Stones, like. Is Bob
good for
up
them?
The,
you got to shoot your shot. You got to take
Bob
your chance, even if it's because of the name. But I don't remember really anything about the show. But I'm imagining being there and just watching all these dudes just doing their chill vibe, even the vocal until he belts it out in the chorus. This place is always very chill, gravelly yet breathy.
Yeah,
the organ subtle, and then you just turn your gaze off to the side of the stage. Here's drummer Bob, just covered in sweat, absolute waterfall of sweat, hacking away like he's trying to jackhammer a concrete sidewalk, going absolutely nuts okay. for the course of a concert.
Technical question for you, Evan.
Yeah. What is the drummer's name?
Former drummer. Mm-hmm. You played the kit in high mm-hmm. school. You're an all-state drummer in Virginia. Mm-hmm. No easy feat. How high would you have to get the drumstick above the drum to create this sort of volume? Like, you can't just leave your wrist in, like, the normal place and get this sound, right? Your wrist couldn't get strong enough.
I don't know. I think, you know, this guy's a touring drummer. He's doing this song every night. He's built up such muscles that I think he could do it from position one.
Your elbow has to be flexing. Is that position one where your elbow doesn't even move?
No, I made that up. There's no position.
I think the elbow is above that. I think he's full extension.
Okay, I'm not going to touch this one. Andrew, do you have enough info to punch up this song?
I have so much info about the song that I already punched it up.
Great. Fantastic. Do you want to take a break?
Yeah, sure. Why not? We always do that. Evan, at the risk of spending too much time in this podcast talking about, you think I'm going to say Bob Dylan?
Yeah.
But no. I'm going to say Carter Beaufort. I looked something up during the break that I was like pretty sure of, but I didn't want to have to do another correction. Crazy fact about the drums on this song. When they went into the studio.
What is about to come out of your mouth?
When they went into the studio to record this song, they'd kind of like been on hiatus. They'd like got dropped.
We're talking about the Wallflowers?
Yeah, they got dropped by
their... So they had an album.
They got dropped by their record label, and then they got re-signed, and they, you know, they went to the studio... Jimmy Iovine signed them. They go into the studio with T-Bone Burnett.
Yeah.
They didn't have a drummer. So this is the guy where they're like, they have an opportunity to be like, to pick any drum sound they want. They don't have to stick with the guy who's been playing drums with them since 1989. They don't have to stick with the guy from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. He already left during their 3-year hiatus. And they're like, this is the guy we'll bring into the studio. And not only that, but thanks to his performance on these studio sessions, he's in the Wallflowers. He plays on their next album. He becomes a member of the Wallflowers because they just love his snare sound so much. That just really tickles me. Like, he gets upgraded from studio musician to member of the Wallflowers because of this album.
Who is it?
I don't know. I didn't write it down.
A guy.
Yeah, just some guy.
Hmm.
Yeah, the drummer. The drummer got upgraded thanks to this snare sound.
I love imagining that scene because that actually means there was a scene in which the whole band was playing with their chill vibes without the drummer. And then he slowly walked over to the drum set, sat down on the throne.
Bah!
I was like, I think what would really work with this song, boom, dee, doom, dee,
doom, dee, is... But it kind of does.
Yeah. Yeah, but you're right. It does. It made it into a great driving song. Made it into it. It worked.
Okay, so we're.
I don't think we've even. We haven't even talked about the song enough. How are you possibly going to punch up the song? We're waltzing over to Elvis Costello and Dave Matthews.
We talked about the song enough. We talked about the song just as much as we usually do. And there's two things I think. There's two things I think that we talked about that are most important for this punch up before we started up.
Uh-huh.
And the two questions are: is Jacob Dylan a nepotism baby? Is he too close to the work of Bob Dylan? Is this a little too close to, like, a Rolling Stone with the organ?
Mm-hmm.
And the other question is the singer of the song driving a car or a motorcycle? What kind of insurance do they have? Some motorcycle insurance or car insurance?
Great. Oh, good punch up always answers some open questions.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Here we go. What?
I need to see your registration then.
No.
Open the driver's side, my friend. Will the Supreme Court, it defines probable cause quite widely, so now
is this a song about you getting pulled over?
But it's also, no, it's a protest song. It's a protest song.
It's a legal law. I'm still not sure.
It's a protest song about the Fourth Amendment.
Yeah, this is a defund the police song. I love it.
Test to see if you are skunk. Hey, while we're back here, I'm going to search your trunk.
Yeah, you know, we're friends.
Yeah.
Me and you.
A friendly search.
Your consent to search, cause your suspicious smirk, complain to whatever lawyer represents you.
You just kind of looked weird. You looked funny.
Great delight, reading Miranda rights, get in the backseat, cause you had one headlight.
And that one headlight opens the door to probable cause. You just need one little thing wrong with your car, one brake light.
Wow.
I wish you knew what the Fourth Amendment says.
I'm learning a lot from this song, actually.
The she in this song, by the way, is the lawyer.
She?
That's the lawyer.
Though I'm still hoping his body cam was rolling, something tells me that it was accidentally off.
Yeah, if they accidentally turn off the body cam, what are you going to do about it?
Just an accident.
A light that was red almost hit him while making an illegal left. He figured you were probably running meth. He hit the light, he hit the gas, you almost killed him dead. Not an illegal search and seizure, cause you were really weaving across six lanes of traffic and the median. Read your Miranda.
Seizure and median. Never been rhymed in a song before.
Never been rhymed before.
It works, in my opinion. Don't want David.
This podcast is nothing if not groundbreaking in the world of lyric inclusion. This song is practically constitutional law. I submit this as a brief.
Your window, there was a pungent scent that wafted right past your Fourth Amendment rights. Of illegal hemp, just take the settlement.
Oh, man.
Just take the settlement.
This is too true. They get you for the headlight.
Just take the settlement. You don't want to go to trial.
No, just take the settlement.
It's only 18 months.
Holy cow. This is too real, man.
Attempted murder of an officer.
Up to attempted murder now.
Then they just take a little whiff.
Somewhere here in this precinct, we can't simply settle this matter by finding that footage from that missing body camera. Your speedy trial will just take a little. It might seem forever, as set out by the Supreme Court case Parker vs. Wingo. But this ain't.
Is that a real case?
It's about Sixth Amendment rights.
Because you were driving home with one headlight.
Drive them with one headlight, and the next thing you know, you're falling under the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court case Barker versus Wingo, and you ain't want to be having to think about Barker versus Wingo.
Oh man. Holy cow. I did not see this coming. This one cuts too deep, man. It's a punch raw. Up. It has things that you could call jokes, but it also has things that you could call.
It's too real.
A Supreme Court defense. It's too real.
Yeah, I mean, they're.
It's too real in the post defund the police era. But you're right. This is the protest song that Bobby Dylan-y would write to take the voice of the police and turn it against
them. I am 100% not kidding that the Fourth Amendment and the Sixth Amendment in the United States of America are pretty fucked up in their current states. I'm starting to sound like a weird libertarian, but I mean this coming from the left with like cops taking your cash and being like, we're just holding this for evidence and keeping your cash forever.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of weird stuff with the Fourth Amendment and the Sixth Amendment right now. And you don't hear a lot of protest songs about them. You know, what if Bobby went there? Or yeah. Not even Bobby. What if Jacob went there?
Yeah.
Just step into the long shadow of your pops.
He's too busy dating ghosts. This song, you could sell this song to Springsteen, though, for sure. Well, I stand it, man. This is a great punch-up. It took a real turn. I didn't see this one coming, but we're going to count this song majorly punched up.
I will say,
woo!
I wasn't going to bring this big Virgin Energy into it.
Oh, no.
But I will, just because you mentioned Bruce Springsteen.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually a little Bruce Springsteen reference in here.
Yeah?
Hit the lights, hit the gas, a reference to my favorite Bruce Springsteen song, State Trooper.
Wow.
No, not State Trooper, Highway Patrolman. They're on the same album, so I mix them up.
Okay.
The me and Frankie laughing and drinking.
Sure.
The song about the cops.
Sure.
He hits the lights and he hits the gas.
Maybe that's what I sensed.
Yeah.
Okay. Congratulations. You took one single phrase. The word "one headlight."
I mean, it took
pivoted into a completely different protest song for the era we live in.
Ruined my workday yesterday to have to spend 90 minutes buying a harmonica in the key of D, but it was worth it. I went to the Atlantic Center Guitar Center. I was there at 11 a.m. rattling the gate like Eric Andre in the meme, screaming, "Let me in!" Because I needed that key of D harmonica.
Right key.
But they opened at 11:02, and I was in and out with that harmonica, ready to convert that organ solo to
And we are so blessed for it. Wow. And you know another thing that you did?
The MIDI harmonica just wouldn't have hit.
Hell no. Another favor you did us in this version, this very 60s folky version, is you deleted the snare.
We should make another version. I mean, it's not on the grid. So we couldn't really.
Not making another version with the snare. No, that's a no.
Just the snare, no other drums.
Let's leave it as is. It's done.
What's your fucking song, Evan?
Yes, you're the man now, dog. Yes.
What's your walk-in song, Evan?
My walk-in song is "Imagine," that I am the son of rock and roll royalty. And not just some member of the Boomtown Rats, but like somebody really, really super famous that has changed history. And I'm trying to have my own music career because I also like music.
For new listeners of the podcast, the Boomtown Rats are our known arch nemesis. you might not know that if you haven't been listening for the last
50 episodes. If you haven't been listening since like episode one or two.
We hate the Boomtown Rats, and the Boomtown Rats hate us.
So I'm not talking about being the son of a Boomtown Ratter. I'm talking about You're like a Dylan or a Lennon or a Jagger, okay. And you go out to try to have your own career. This is me, and then I have to go on Elvis Costello's kind of, you know, C-list chat show, and I'm just feeling dejected because they only wanted to talk about my dad, and then we sort of got to my song. I come back, I feel bad, and I just want to listen to some sad girl music and be in my feelings. So I put on this truly great song from a very wonderful record that came out this year, I think.
I'm gonna cry. I'm probably gonna cry before this. Yeah. This is good.
You were gonna cry.
What is this, Seven? Anything
that's not in your junk drawer. Well, the album is called Moss. Beautiful singer-songwriter record. This song is called Backup Plan. And it's by Maya Hawke, child of Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman, and star through Hollywood nepotism, star of Stranger Things.
No.
And who has a perfectly wonderful singer-songwriter album out.
Who's she on Stranger Things?
She is the friend of Steve that they work together at the ice cream place in the mall season, and then in the recent season they're at the video store.
I didn't watch enough seasons. Isn't that a little ironic that she wants to be Moss so bad, yet Jacob Dylan doesn't want to be a Rolling Stone?
Whoa, sick.
Wow. We didn't even plan that.
Brought it back.
Two very small anecdotes I want to share from the... That made me really, really sentimental, and it made me think of two really sentimental anecdotes that Jacob Dylan had in his interview about his relationship with his dad that made me really like Jacob Dylan a lot, but also made me kind of feel for him. Like, you know, you make fun of nepotism babies, but
They're in a tough position, man. Yeah.
Bob Dylan is really fucking famous. People are literally stealing their trash when Jacob Dylan is a kid to go through and see if
he threw away any notes.
New songs.
And stuff. You can't help that if you're Jacob. That just sucks for you.
His bar mitzvah was crashed. Crazy Bob Dylan fans showed up at his bar mitzvah. That sucks.
That sucks.
And the really sentimental thing that made me really feel for him is he talked about that they would come back to New York City to visit friends, and that a lot of Bob Dylan's friends still lived in the village, but they would always stay near Central Park. And Bob Dylan, and this is really sweet too, would insist on walking from Greenwich Village to Central Park, which is about 50 blocks. Like, what is that? 2.5, 3 miles?
Mm-hmm.
And that Jacob Dylan, because he'd seen how his father was treated in L.A., like, he can't go anywhere. People are always coming up to him. Like, was basically, like, afraid for, like, his father always insisted on doing this. I don't know if Jacob Dylan said anything to his dad, but basically was, like, constantly afraid of his physical safety. Was like, my dad could be attacked on the street,
right?
Walking from 4th Street to 59th Street.
Yeah, he could just be mobbed in Times Square.
It's like, you know, we've made fun of Jacob Dylan a lot for being a nepotism baby, but
that's something he can't help.
Being a nepotism baby ain't always easy, even if Mike Campbell's playing on your album. Noted Florida Gators fan, Mike Campbell.
What?
Let's move on.
Is that the same guy from the Tom Petty episode that we?
Yeah.
Talked about?
Yeah, he's just over the top for the Florida Gators.
Yeah, we can't tie it in. You'll just have to go back and listen to our episode.
There's no time for that.
Get to your walk-in scenario.
My walk-in scenario is...
Pause. What is your walk-in in
music? My walk-in scenario is that I was driving home with one headlight, and someone mistook my car for... a motorcycle.
Oh, yeah.
And
it messed up their depth perception.
A lot of people hate motorcycles. Have you seen the movie Easy Rider? Those guys got murdered.
Yeah.
So they saw a motorcycle coming and they just slammed. They hit the lights. They hit the gas.
Those beatniks.
And they drove straight towards me to kill me.
Whoa, on purpose.
And it worked because they hate motorcycles so much.
Okay.
And at the last minute, they were like, oh no, it's a car. I like drivers of cars.
Oh, I killed the wrong guy.
They hit me. They're fine. They have airbags, but I'm driving a beat-up old truck.
Yeah.
I fly through the windshield and die.
I just want to say this is a great scenario. I'm riveted.
We've had a lot of death walk-in songs, but this isn't the walk-in song to my death.
What?
It's the next day, I'm having a dawn funeral.
You're having a dawn funeral at dawn.
Funeral at dawn. Very, the next day.
Very common. When you're beloved.
Yeah, there's a grave digger.
When people wake up for you.
Just because that's kind of the vibe of my life. Real grave digger, not like an earth-moving machine like most modern cemeteries would have.
Yeah.
Just a single man in like an undershirt.
You're a retro guy.
One of those white A-frame undershirts.
You have retro vibes, so you get your grave dug
manually. He's dug my grave. And the dirt starts showering down on my face. I'm not in a coffin. I'm just in a shroud.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a wanderer, so my family doesn't even know about it.
A pauper's grave.
A pauper's.
Yeah. You're in Potter's Field.
In a Potter's Field.
Named after Mr. Potter, played by Lionel Barrymore, grandfather of Drew Barrymore.
Really? No.
In the movie Wonderful Life, his slum is called Potter's Field, which is a play on...
A Potter's Field.
A Potter's Field, namely...
Where people, yeah.
That's the old name for Pauper's Graves. Yeah, it's a play on words.
I thought you were saying Potter's Fields were named after Potter's Field and It's Wonderful Life. But you're saying It's a Wonderful Life Potter's Field is named after Potter's Fields where paupers were buried. And that I agree with. Let's move on. So I'm being buried in a Potter's Field in a pauper's grave. Mm-hmm. The dirt is raining down on my shroud.
Mm-hmm.
And this song starts playing. That's the sound of the dirt. Actually, it'd be more like, gah!
Gah! No, don't ruin this with a snare. This is beautiful.
There's a story told.
Mm. The story of my life. Well,
very gentle.
That was you, a gentle boy.
Honestly, this isn't a great matchup for the scenario because it's about a couple that died together and then being buried together, where I'm being buried alone in a pauper's field. But as far as I know, this is the most beautiful song about a funeral, about a cemetery out there. Yeah.
At this point in the song, the two lovers are alive, but by the last verse, they die.
They're dead.
Then they go to their grave.
And their hearts are full of spring.
And the last verse is about their grave.
And their beautiful flowers that grow.
Yeah. So this is a great song about a grave and related to One Headlight.
Yes.
Great song about dating a ghost.
It's Their Hearts Were Full of Spring by the Four Freshmen.
And the
juicy harmonies.
Whoa! They get accused of being barbershoppers because there's four of them.
Yeah.
But it ain't. It's weren't too they, jazzy for barbershop.
I think they were winning Grammys in the jazz category. So, like, people, they were, now you listen back to this and you're like, oh, this is kind of like a novelty act, right? But it's like, I think they, I don't know. This is good.
They're singing the hell out of these harmonies. You know what? If you go home and you ask your Alexa to play the Four Freshmen, you have a great night.
Yeah. The technical.
Woo! Okay, here's the they died part.
And their graves were. My grave is by itself, unfortunately.
Couldn't the evil driver then go hit your girlfriend and she could be buried by you?
Maybe the driver died, but we fell in love.
Yes.
So we were passing.
Now we're talking.
Through the windshields.
Yeah.
The technical term for these harmonies is crunchy. It's very crunchy harmonies.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, that's when the ghosts
the
French.
They say that
right
the,
there, those descending chords, that's when the ghosts freaking French the hell out of each other.
What,
that's a haunted French.
What was the lyric? What grows the whole year round?
I'm not going to interrupt this last chord. The lyric is,
and they say violets grow there the whole year round.
And then that's
for their hearts were full of spring.
Okay, you picked a walk-in song that I already knew, but that's a great pick.
Wow.
I hope you can fall in love with a ghost. You can French. This has been Punch Up the Jam, your favorite podcast about constitutional law.
Let's punch it.
Follow the show at Punch Up the Jam. Come on over to our Patreon. Get the song. Patreon.com/Gregory Brothers.
And remember, if you're arrested, make sure your Miranda rights are read to you.
Don't let them look in the trunk.
You've been listening to Punch Up the Jam.
That was a HeadGum original.